point of divorce, you have very, very little information or very little reliable information and high emotions. The fear, the anger, the sadness are usually at a high. And that's usually the very worst place in which to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And that's where we need to help people slow down, get the information they need, get the support they need, mm-hmm. emotional support, friend support, clergy, therapists, the kind of thing they do so that they're in a position to make those decisions, because it can all be pretty overwhelming at first.
Welcome to the Daisy Camp Podcast. Daisy Camp is a woman's nonprofit resource for education and empowerment before, during, and after her divorce. It's our mission to be that safe place for you to get support and reliable information that you'll need to grow into your ever-expanding life. Hi, welcome to our third episode of the Daisy Camp Podcast. My name is Emily John, and today I'm here with Ron Oski. I'm so excited to have Ron on the show because he's been with Daisy Camp since the very beginning, about 15 years. Ron is a collaborative attorney and mediator right here in the Twin Cities. He has an office in the Edina area, and he's also a speaker and an author on divorce and just a wonderful resource for us to have. And so, Ron, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Emily. I'm glad to be here.
So I wanted to just start this episode on kind of the 30,000 foot level and ask you just a little bit about, you know, what are the ways people go about doing divorce and how do we think about that?
Thank you. I'm really glad we're starting with that because I think that's the big thing that's on a lot of people's mind. When I talk to people at the early stages of divorce or even when they're thinking about whether there might be a divorce, what they don't often realize is that there's a lot of different choices, a lot of different ways to do it, mm-hmm. depending on what your goals are, what your resources are. And it's not a one size fits all anymore. And so one of the biggest myths out there is that, well, there's just one way to do it. You go see a lawyer and a lawyer does it and takes care of it. But the reality is there's a whole range of choices. And when I explain this to people, I ask them to think about it as being on a long continuum from the most intense to the easiest. And of course, the most intense way to do a divorce is to go to trial, have a trial with a judge. Okay. But that almost never happens.
Oh,
that
really?
Happens maybe 2 or 3% of the time. Very rare. Most people can't afford that. It's acrimonious. It takes time. So even though the trial looms out there as a threat or a danger, it almost never happens. So that's one end of the continuum.
Okay.
The other end of the continuum is people do divorce completely on their own. They don't have any lawyers. They don't have any mediators. They don't have any therapists. They just do it on their own. And that happens, but it's not very frequent either. Most people fall in the middle category, which is that they reach agreement somewhere. And as difficult as it seems, you will very likely reach an agreement. 98% of people do.
Okay.
But you usually do that with some help from people. And
sure.
So the real question in those middle categories is what are the kinds of help you can get? And there are probably 4 different ways that people get help within, at least in Minnesota and in most communities. And I would describe them as traditional negotiation, mm-hmm. mediation, collaborative divorce, and then on some form of unbundled representation, which I'll talk about in a bit. But those are the 4 main methods.
Okay. And so, yeah, can we kind of go through each of those?
Yes, I would like to do that. And so I'll start with traditional representation, which is the easiest one to understand because it means each person hires a traditional lawyer. Each spouse hires a traditional lawyer. And that lawyer, even though they don't go to trial, they might file papers and serve papers, and it might be we call kind of a court-assisted settlement. A judge will be assigned to their case, and the judge might set up settlement conferences and those kinds of things. And it's what I call bargaining in the shadow of the courthouse. And sometimes those cases settle really early on. Sometimes they settle a month before trial, but there's a wide range of things. And most of my practice is focused on not the traditional method, but I want to make sure people understand that the traditional method means you negotiate with lawyers. It's not the end of the world. Sometimes it works really well, but I think mm-hmm. a lot of people would like a method that's less court involved and less involved in working with attorneys as much. And so the other two methods, other methods I'll describe are mostly out-of-court methods.
Okay.
The most common, or the out-of-court method that most people have heard about the most probably, is something called mediation.
Mm-hmm.
And mediation means working with a neutral person. It means a neutral person helping you and your spouse reach agreements. The mediator can sit with you and through several meetings, help you establish your goals, mm-hmm. help you gather information, help you reach agreements, and help you get your agreement ready to present to the court. However, what the one thing a mediator can't do, or there's two things a mediator can't do. One is that they can't give you legal advice. And the second thing is that they can't draft the final papers, the papers that go to court. Now, because of that, most people, when they go to mediation, often get legal advice from somewhere else. So in other words, even if you go to mediation, mediation can reduce the amount of lawyer time that you have, but it usually doesn't eliminate it because you and your spouse still need to get legal advice from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that means you and your spouse probably, not always, but probably will still get an attorney, and you might have the attorneys right there in the mediation with you, mm-hmm. or you might have mediators just in the background to draft the papers or counsel you in the process. So mediation can work a variety of ways, but think of it as a neutral person, and then each, you and your spouse, each having a lawyer, maybe sitting at the table with you, but maybe in the background. That's mediation.
Mm-hmm.
The next area, and this is an area where I do most of my work, and I admit a bias towards this one. I wrote a book about this one about 20 years ago called Collaborative Divorce. But collaborative divorce is a method that's started in Minnesota 30 years ago and has really grown all over the world. It started with one guy named Stu Webb, who co-authored the book with me. He started this back in 1990,
mm-hmm.
and it went from one guy to tens of thousands of people in 28 different countries and 5 different continents. And we've done trainings all over the world about collaborative divorce. So it's a relatively new method, mm-hmm. but it's a way of combining some of the traditional parts of divorce and some of the values of mediation. So let me explain a little bit more about how a collaborative divorce looks like, and we'll get more into detail on that later. But just to start on the basic elements, it starts with each person, each spouse, getting a collaborative lawyer. Well, what does it mean that there's a collaborative lawyer? Well, a collaborative lawyer is a lawyer who's involved for settlement purposes only. In other words, they're just there to work on the settlement of the case. If for some reason it turns into a nasty fight and has to go to trial or to court in a litigious way, mm-hmm. then those lawyers would have to withdraw and the clients would have to get lawyers that would litigate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to some people, that seems like kind of a crazy part. Well, why would I get lawyers who aren't necessarily going to go to court? Well, those of us that do a lot of collaborative law, that's really the valuable part, because it helps get the lawyers focused on settlement. Mm-hmm. If lawyers are bargaining in the shadow of the courthouse, meaning if they might go to court, it sometimes affects the way they behave.
Sure.
And collaborative lawyers are trained differently to use different kind of settlement strategies to help people resolve issues out of court. And that's the anchor piece, is that you get lawyers who resolve things out of court using collaborative strategies. And the centerpiece of that is the idea that what most people tell me they want, when I talk to clients almost all the time, they tell me they want two things that seem kind of contradictory, but they're really not. The first thing they tell me is that they want things to be amicable,
mm-hmm.
for the sake of their kids. Usually if they're young children, people don't want children to be damaged by this, so they want it to be amicable. For the sake of their expenses, they don't want a big expensive divorce.
Sure.
For the sake of their own sanity. There's a lot of reasons people want it to be amicable, which makes sense. At the same time, people want to make sure that they get protected in a way, that they get a settlement that they're not going to regret.
Sure.
They don't want to think, well, I'm going to get an amicable settlement, but I wind up with a settlement. I just give in everything and I let my spouse get whatever he or she wants, and then I get a bad settlement. Well, so they don't want that. So they want something amicable, and yet they want to feel some sense of advocacy, someone who's on their side and protecting them.
Sure.
And in my view, that's what a collaborative lawyer is trained to do, is to advocate for you, to give you that same protection you would have with a court lawyer,
mm-hmm.
but to advocate in a different way. And that's maybe the most crucial piece of all of this, is that looking for a different kind of advocacy, somebody that'll help you get what you want, but to do it without alienating your spouse.
Sure.
Especially especially if there's young children involved, you and your spouse are likely to be working together the rest of your lives. And to get what you want and advocate for what you want without antagonizing them mm-hmm. is part of the art of this. And an essential piece of that, which maybe I'll talk about later, is a thing called interest-based bargaining. And collaborative lawyers use something called interest-based bargaining to try to get people what they want without antagonizing the other party. So that's the centerpiece of collaborative lawyer, is two lawyers trained to resolve issues in an interest-based way out of court. The other part of collaborative practice, which I think is essential, is that it is a interdisciplinary approach, meaning that you don't just rely on lawyers, rely on other people to help you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, because even though we think of divorce as being a legal thing, it's really only partly a legal thing. I would say divorce is only about 30% legal. There's financial issues, there's mm-hmm. parenting issues, there's communication issues. Mm-hmm. And lawyers, while they have expertise, aren't experts in all their areas. I've raised three kids. I love kids, but they didn't teach me anything in law school about how to parent your children.
Right.
And so if you want expertise about parenting your children, you should have a parenting expert.
Sure.
So in a collaborative case, we will have a neutral parenting expert, a little bit like a mediator, but one who focuses just on parenting, to help the parents come up with a parenting plan that can work to their best interest. So they team up with the lawyers to help work together.
Okay.
Similarly, on the financial issues, there are complicated financial issues in a lot of divorces. And while the lawyers can do that, sometimes it's better to have a financial neutral, somebody who's really good with budgets and taxes and spreadsheets, who can work with them as a neutral person to get the best financial settlement for everybody. And so in most divorce cases, collaborative cases, we'll have a financial neutral on the team, mm-hmm. in addition to a family or child specialist on the team. We might also even have a coach to work on the emotional pieces. If the emotional pieces or communication pieces are getting in the way, mm-hmm. then we'll have a coach to work with them. And so having a full team, it helps you get resolution, not just of the legal issues, but of the communication issues, the parenting issues, and the family issues, and the financial issues. Now, I know you might be thinking, a lot of people think, well, gee, isn't that expensive getting all those experts involved?
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, and I anticipated that. Well, but the interesting thing is it usually is not, because when the parenting person or the financial person is working on the case, then a lot of that, the lawyers can step back. So rather than paying the lawyer their hourly rate, which is usually a higher rate, mm-hmm. and rather than paying two lawyers to do something that a parenting person can do, you're paying one person at a lower hourly rate to replace two people at a higher hourly rate. So usually the cost of the whole team can be done much more efficiently and keep it more cost effective. And so the two main elements of collaborative divorce are, one, getting lawyers who are involved for settlement purposes only, and secondly, getting a team of people to help not with the financial issue, but the other issues as well. Now, the idea of getting a team isn't just in collaborative. You can do that in mediation and other areas as well. It's just that in collaborative, it's kind of a centerpiece of that.
Sure. Okay.
And so I said I'd round out the other method of doing divorce that we didn't cover is something called an unbundled method. And I kind of use that as a general catch-all, because people say, well, can't we just use one lawyer, or can't we just use a lawyer to do some things? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes, you can, but you have to do it with some care. What we mean by unbundled legal services is that it's selecting a lawyer to just take care of some elements and not others. Normally, lawyers work as fully retained lawyers. So normally when you retain a lawyer, mm-hmm. you're asking him or her to do everything from gathering information, drafting your papers, negotiating, doing all sorts of legal things, and then, you know, covering the entire case. Unbundled services means having a lawyer just do some things and not others. So let's say you and your spouse have worked on most of the agreement and you just want the lawyer to draw the papers up. Mm-hmm. That means the lawyer is mostly just going to be drafting. They might be advising you a little bit, but they're just doing selected items. And that's generally for people that have an agreement or close to an agreement and really want to keep the cost down. Mm-hmm. I say you can do the cases without a lawyer at all, which sometimes works. But sometimes it's better to get a little bit of legal help, drafting the papers and getting advice. And that's what unbundled legal services does. The other question I get asked a lot is, well, can we use just one lawyer? And the mm-hmm. fact is, You can use one lawyer, but that one lawyer has to represent only one person. In Minnesota, a lawyer cannot represent both spouses. That's a conflict of interest.
Okay.
But they can represent one person and then that and draft the papers for that person. And then the other spouse can either waive their right to a lawyer or they can have a lawyer look at the papers. And so you can work with one lawyer if you're sure you have an agreement, but the one lawyer is just representing the one person. So those are all the different methods. I can get into greater detail in some of those, but just gives people an overview. And the key is to be able to select from those items and find the choice that works best for you, given your financial resources, given the what matters to you, given the issues that are involved, and given your comfort level. And it depends on how you and your spouse can sit down together. Some people are very, very comfortable sitting down with their spouse across the table and working on issues. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people are very intimidated by their spouse. Sometimes there are abuse issues, which takes a whole different dynamic.
Sure,
yeah. If you're intimidated or if there's been a history of abuse, of course, you need a system that's more protective. And you need to design a system within any of those that makes sure you feel safe during the negotiations.
Sure. Thank you for that. It's nice to at least know what's available and what's out there. We'll dive a little bit deeper into the collaborative law piece in the next episode. Mm-hmm. But I just had a couple more questions that came up as I was, listening to you speak. One would be, what happens when you and say your husband or your spouse do not agree on the method that's supposed to be taken?
No, that's a great question. And you're right. All these methods, other than the traditional lawyer method, these other methods have to be agreed upon. The default, if your spouse won't agree, the default, meaning is the traditional method, you can hire a lawyer and you can file papers and you can serve papers on your spouse. Mm-hmm. And then he or she will be required to do it traditionally. Now, even if they do that, very likely that the court or the judge will probably require them to try some mediation.
Sure.
But starting with mediation or starting with collaborative practice or starting with an unbundled service probably requires the parties to agree on a method. Now, and raise another interesting question is that I encourage people to, if they can, select a method and even select attorneys with their spouse together. That seems kind of crazy at times, but mm-hmm. it's actually smarter than you think. I often get even couples that come to me and I explain this together so you both can choose a method that makes sense for both of you. And mm-hmm. so if you can get your spouse involved in selecting a method, then you'll both probably be better off.
Sure.
But in some cases it isn't possible to do that. And if you can't, then you might have to rely upon the attorneys to help you select a method once you get the attorneys on board.
Okay, sure. And then just the last question would be, what are the most common questions that come up when people are first starting this process?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I mean, one, people are often afraid, so they're wondering, what can I expect? And so often they want an overview about what the law will say about things, so that comes up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of questions about how long will it take? Mm-hmm. What will it cost? Of course, they have a lot of what will happen to me, and of course, a lot of that sort of depends. And so we try to break it down, learn about their situation, give them some idea about the time frame and the cost. And then there's a lot of myth that people have out there. They say, well, I've heard this happens. What about that? And so there's a lot of specific things. But I think mostly people just want reassurance about what the process is going to look like. One of the things in the book I talk about is divorce is like going into a journey through a dark wooded area that you've never been in before. Mm-hmm. And you need a guide, somebody to kind of help you understand how to get through that wooded, scary area. So people, if they haven't been through divorce before, and most people haven't, it can be pretty terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And as one of our Daisy Camp presenters, Amy Wolf, always talks about, is that people operate on low information and high emotion. At
yes.
the beginning of divorce, you have very, very little information or very little reliable information and high emotions. The fear, the anger, the sadness are usually at a high. And that's usually the very worst place in which to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we need to help people slow down, get the information they need, get the support they need, mm-hmm. emotional support, friend support, clergy, therapists, the kind of thing they do so that they're in a position to make those decisions, because it can all be pretty overwhelming at first.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the question people have on the front end are more the urgent questions. Well, do I leave the house, or does he leave the house, or does she leave the house? And mm-hmm. if I leave, is that going to be work against me? And what do we do about these urgent issues? And of course, those need to be addressed, but they need to be addressed in terms of the larger picture as well.
Sure. So. Oh, well, thank you for that. It was so nice to get a little overview of what's going on. And I'd like to just talk about your book for a minute, because mm-hmm. like you mentioned before, you did write a book about 20 years ago, you said?
Actually about 15, I realize now. Yeah, I think I said 20, but it's actually been about 15.
Yep. And what's the title of that book?
It's called The Collaborative Way to Divorce: The Revolutionary Method That Results in Less Stress, Lower Costs, and Happier Kids Without Going to Court.
Wonderful. And we will link that in the show notes if you'd like to get some more information from that. And we'll also link Ron's contact information if you'd like to get some more information about what he does. And thank you so much for joining us today for this episode, Ron. And for those of you listening, if you'd like more information, we are going to continue this conversation in the next few episodes. So keep listening. All right. Have a wonderful rest of your week. And this is Emily John signing off. Thank you so much for showing up today and investing a little time in yourself. If you found this episode helpful but would like to dive deeper, come over to www.daisycamp.org and check out our community resources. We also have recommended reading and upcoming events, both in person in the Minneapolis area and worldwide through our online webinars. Daisy Camp's board, staff, and speakers volunteer their time and are here to help you. Come on over and get involved. We'd love to have you join us. Thanks again, and keep listening.